Blog Talk Radio.
Today's show examines where the rubber meets the road with veteran diversity and LGBT professional Sima Lieberman. She's developed a 25 foolproof ways to determine the effectiveness of your diversity strategy in your company, organization, or community. Take out your pen and scorecard and determine if diversity is real or imaginary in your establishment. I'll also debut my fourth book entitled My Personal Journal, Chronicle Your Way One Day at a Time. Chronicle Your Life One Day at a Time. It provides the perfect way to jumpstart your surefire way to create a steady stream of journal entries every single day. And you'll learn how I amassed nearly 40 volumes of journal entries over the past 17 years. That's 40 volumes of journal entries over the past 17 years. And finally, you'll learn why you should attend the upcoming February 11th Black History Breakfast if you live anywhere near Boston. This is Carol Copeland Thomas, and you're listening to Focus on Empowerment. Hello, my friends. I'm glad that you have listened today. I hope that you are safe and warm. We've had some horrendous traffic jam, weather-related issues in parts of the United States, including Atlanta, other parts of Georgia, Alabama, and North Carolina. I hope everything just gets back to whatever normal happens to be in that neck of the woods, because a little bit of ice and snow has just wreaked havoc on them. It's cold here in Boston. But, 20 degrees now, maybe, or 25, goes down to about 10 or so at night. We've had some sub-below temperatures, but, we're pretty hardy, and we're used to this kind of weather, and unfortunately, in parts of the South, they're not. Glad to know that California is finally getting some rain up in Sacramento, and we certainly hope that weather patterns, wherever you happen to be, will be on track, giving you the amount of sunlight and nourishment and water that you need to survive. Well, speaking of survival, so often in this world of diversity, we talk about the effectiveness of diversity and how to measure the effectiveness. We're going to talk to a leading expert now who I've known for many, many years. She is very well versed of diversity work, is very very prominent and respected in the LGBT community, and is going to navigate us through 25 traits or 25 ways to measure how well you can manage diversity in your organization, your company, or in your community event, that the community impact that you are having within your community. Very glad to bring to the airwaves again Sima Lieberman. Hello, Sima. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Carol. So glad to be here.
Great. Very great. Glad that you are there. And you're in sunny California, so hopefully, but you're in Northern California, so hopefully the weather is cooperating where you're living.
Well, it's raining a little bit, but I have to say that here, when it gets to be like 55 degrees, we're in down jackets, and people from the East Coast, we know they're from the East Coast because they're wearing shorts.
Right. you would freeze here in Greater Boston area, because we were having really cold weather. But let's get right down to it. Yeah, I read your blog, I said, oh, this really sounds quite interesting. Let me read through it. She's got some really good ideas. Sima, I wanted to have you on the show just because of how you are approaching diversity and looking at the 25 traits of a diversity organization. So the first one you talk, we're not going to go through all of them. It's going to be a little teaser, and we want people to go to your blog, so we'll give that information a little later on. But the first one you say is everyone is seen. This is 25 traits of a diverse organization. Everyone is seen as part of the organization's diversity, and the goal is to make everyone's needs and concerns a part of the mainstream diversity effort. What do you mean by that?
Well, what I mean by that is that diversity, that everybody is included. And when I mean everybody, I mean everybody. I mean like old white guys. I mean young African Americans or young Latinas or old Latinas. I mean, people of all ages, all backgrounds, sexual orientation, everything, that everybody is part of the diversity and inclusion initiative. So it's not just that you're having an initiative or you're creating diversity and inclusion to help a certain group of people, but this is so that everybody can be successful and that everybody can help the organization be successful. Mm-hmm. And that the organization recognizes that it needs everybody, because there are some organizations or some people in organizations that don't get that piece.
Right, right, right. So you're looking obviously from an inclusive perspective and making sure that everyone is on board and is duly recognized. You know, you sort of tie that in with another point that you have here. And again, I'm not reading all of them because I want people to read your blog, but one that you have is a diverse organization's culture is based on inclusion of all employees and not just on representation. Diversity management does not equal affirmative action. Explain the difference between diversity and this approach to diversity and clearly affirmative action, Sema.
Well, when people talk about affirmative action, they're really talking about, you're talking about numbers, you're talking about, and you're talking about certain groups, which, I mean, affirmative action, I believe, is important, but it's not diversity. And what ends up happening is that diversity gets equated with affirmative action, so they'll have like the affirmative action person running diversity when it's really, it's not the same. Because when affirmative action, you're targeting specific groups to give, make sure that everybody is represented in the organization. But when you have a diverse organization's culture, it's based on inclusion, it means that, like I said earlier, it's everybody, and it's also showing what every single person can do. It's not just getting people in the organization. It's not just, hey, this is going to look good in the company photo. Because you want to embed it in the culture. Because what happens sometimes is that some organizations where they just get, they stop at affirmative action. So they'll say, okay, look at our numbers. Yes, your numbers are great if I'm looking at call centers, if I'm looking at people who work in manufacturing. But as you get higher, your numbers really aren't that good. There's not that much even representation. And at the same time, you could have numbers of people in 2013, and then in 2014, you have the same numbers, but the people are different because the culture itself has not changed. It's not a culture that made sure that everybody is included, where everybody really can do their best work, where everybody's genius is leveraged.
Well, you know, you made a very important point, and this happens way too often, is that you can go to certain companies, certain organizations, you can see this in healthcare a lot, where you will see a very, in hospitality, the same thing, very strong representation of all races, all ethnicities within a company or a corporation or a chain or whatever, in the lower levels and the rank and file and maybe on the manufacturing floor. But as you go up the ladder and you're talking about middle management, senior management, and certainly the C-suite, that's where it becomes very, very white in so many cases. So I guess that would tie in with your whole concept of representation throughout an organization.
Exactly. Exactly. And if we're really talking about a change, if we're talking about inclusive culture, we're talking about a change. We're talking about a change on every level, not even just looking at, well, we're looking at who's there, what does it look like, but also what's the mindset? Because do you have an inclusion mindset, or do you just have, well, let's have 5 of these, 10 of these, 5 of those?
Got it. You also make a really good point, and this is what really caught my attention. You said diversity, this is another one of your measurement tips. Diversity is a mindset, a continuous process, a way of doing business, not a one-off program or two-hour training. I need to do a whole program on training anyway, and what is training, what constitutes training. But then when you finally get in the room and you're negotiating, you know, what this initiative is going to look like, and they say, well, all we can do is, you know, we can pull everybody together and have you cover diversity 101 issues for 2 hours, and then they can check off that box. So I think you're trying to counter what typically happens in some companies where it's not really training, it's a presentation.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and these things are good to be able to acquaint people with what is diversity, to get people's curiosity up, to make people see that, okay, I'm in it. But then it's now what? And so many organizations, here's what they do. we really want to do a big diversity push this year. We really believe in diversity. And they say they believe in inclusion. And they contact me and they say, okay, what we want to do is we just want to do a 1 hour lunch and learn. Lunch and learn are good for curiosity, but if that's where you're going, you're not really talking about a change. And if you have that mindset, it means that you're looking at yourself personally. You're looking, you're becoming culturally intelligent, where it means that you could be able to develop relationships with everybody, no matter who they are. Mm-hmm. And when I say that it's in your culture, it's more than just me being a CEO saying this is what they need to do. But from the CEO, my mindset has changed. I've gone through a transformation because very few people grow up with that kind of mindset. Maybe now more people do, like there are more people like, say, our age who are, we've raised our kids and our kids have raised their kids. But for so many people, just saying I like diversity, which is great, but it doesn't really mean that you have made any kind of change to help the organization change.
Correct. And then we could have another show just talking about how diverse is your social life. How does diversity spread itself throughout your entire life? And that, I mean, that is where the numbers are really off the chart in terms of people being way over-indexed in terms of practicing diversity, maybe on the job, but way under-indexed with their private lives.
And you know what, Carol? I so agree with that, and I've heard people say, and I've done workshops where people say things like, well, you're telling me to socialize with people from different cultures or different, I don't socialize with anybody. I mean, that's just an excuse. Get out and socialize with somebody, and or even though, I have to say, still, when you go to organizations, and I look at who's sitting with who in the cafeteria, yes, it's more diverse than it used to be, but you're still seeing these little enclaves. Not saying that you can't be with people who are like you for comfort, but if that's the assumption that that's always what's going to happen, then how are people really, if you don't develop those kind of relationships with people, then when you're in the workplace, it's hard to use each other as resources because you're not comfortable.
That's so true. Yes, I mean, that's a whole topic of discussion, that whole interaction and interpersonal relationships, both on and off the job, that get us to social dynamics that are, again, self-segregated in many cases, where we're living in cultural silos. Another one you say, company recruiters are trained in bias reduction so that they don't choose candidates based on assumptions and stereotypes. Now, that's hitting the HR department right between the eyes. Talk to us more about that one, Sima Lieberman.
Well, because oftentimes what companies will do is they think that they've got it down. They go, okay, I'm going to go to a historically black college and university, and I'm going to recruit people. But people aren't trained in communication skills, in how to actually talk to people who are different than them or how to deal with discomfort. So they just stand there. Like I said, they stand there like a doofus, and nobody comes up to them. And they say, oh, nobody came up to us. So they don't really know how to talk to people. And then when they're interviewing, the interview is still based on their bias. I mean, I was training some recruiters in hiring. And I said, well, what would make you exclude a candidate or discount a candidate? And somebody said, well, if somebody lived more than an hour away, I would assume that they couldn't get here on time.
Ooh.
Like, duh. Or they'll say, well, I try to find out if they have a car. If they don't have a car, why is they not going to get there on time? And then I've also heard people say things I heard somebody once saying to me, well, I'm not racist, but I have found that a certain, they were talking about Vietnamese people, I need somebody to be really assertive, and I'm not racist, but I found that Vietnamese people are not very assertive. So therefore, I try not to spend a lot of time talking to any of them.
Ouch.
I say ouch. Because do you really want to get the best people, or do you want to just get somebody who's going to fit what you think, who you think is going to be the best person? Like, I mean, I remember Google, I don't know if they, a while back, you had to have a certain grade point average to get hired, And other companies wanted to make sure that you went to a certain school. We only recruit from Stanford, Harvard, Yale, whoever. So yeah, you're really missing a lot of people.
That whole Ivy League piece is quite prevalent in certain companies. I know packaged goods companies had a big bias about going to Ivy League schools, having worked for a packaged goods company 30 years ago. I know that was a huge bias during that time. That's a big problem. Yeah.
Tell that to Larry Ellison. Tell that to the late Steve Jobs. They wouldn't have been able to work at these companies.
Right. And you have another one. You say all people feel included and are able to do their best work for the organization. Each person has an equal chance to show what he or she can do. So why is that important? And give us a sense of how that can be measured with this list of 25 traits.
Well, that is when each person has an equal chance to show what he or she can do. If I'm a manager and I'm an extrovert, chances are I'm going to be attracted to other extroverts in the organization.
Okay.
And so when it comes time for me to assign a responsibility or to ask somebody what they think, there's a good chance I'm going to go to the other extroverts, or I'm going to get people's ideas through brainstorming. Now, a lot of people don't do well in brainstorming. A lot of people do well if they are able to write their ideas down because they need to go and think about it. And you never know what kind of genius is going to come from that. So if you only pick one way to access people's brilliance, you're really going to lose a lot of people. And then after a while, when people are not engaged, when you don't engage people with different communication styles, difference in any way, they start dropping out. Even if they're still in your organization, they're going to drop out. They're not engaged. They're not going to contribute to your organization. And at some point, if there's an opportunity at one of your competitors, you're going to go to the competitors.
Hmm. So what you're saying is that there has to be some kind of system put in place where we, those who are in decision-making roles, whether they're managers, HR professionals, recruiters, et cetera, they are, it's almost like a self-accountability process, a monitoring of how decisions are made and how you are accessing resources and pools of people to either serve as a candidate pool for your company or within your company, making sure everybody is represented throughout the board, across the board.
And one thing that I always suggest is to create a talent bank. And what that means is that everybody has an opportunity to share in one way or another what their skills are, because oftentimes people are hired for one job, but they have some skills that are not being used that maybe another function can use at that particular moment. Maybe you think, I'm going to go outside the organization and I'm going to hire somebody who does social media, when you have maybe some person in your organization who is like a genius at social media. That's just not what they were hired to do, but you could bring that person into that part of your organization. You don't have to hire from outside. You know what talents are in your organization. And when you do that, then more people have an equal chance to show what he or she can do. And when you're talking about measurements, some things you can measure qualitatively, like you can measure just by looking at the organization or being part of the organization. And other things, you really need to do some metrics. You need to use maybe an assessment tool where you do an assessment that includes people from every single level. And oftentimes, people at the lowest levels are left out.
Right. Well, that's a tall order. I went to a very good seminar yesterday that talked about creating entrepreneurs within a company and the opportunities and how important it is, but all the barriers. And what you're suggesting sort of goes hand in hand with what was discussed yesterday is that you're expecting people and the paradigm to shift and a change to take place. And unfortunately, the resistance can oftentimes eliminate the opportunities for all representation to take place within a company when you really want to be fully diverse and inclusive. One last one I want to tease our audience with, and again, you've got to go to the website. We'll give you that in just a few minutes. You say people from different races, ethnicities, gender, sexual orientations, religion, and physical abilities are seen as resources for different markets. but not necessarily sent to those markets to represent the organization. Wow. Talk to us about that one, Sima.
Well, because another common practice that some organizations have is they say, well, yeah, we want to get people from different cultures because we need to expand into like the Latino market, or
right.
We want to expand into the Korean market, or whatever it is, and so mm-hmm. or they have like an African American area. So what they end up doing is they end up looking at somebody from that particular culture, and they'll say, okay, a Korean person will send to the Korean area, African American will send to an African American area, but they don't think that they can go into the white area. Now, if you have people from different cultures, you want to be an ethnicities, genders, sexual orientation, all of that. You want to be able to use those people as resources, so you might run some marketing ideas by them. And you have to do it with more than one person, because people have different ideas of who their own, you know, because people are cross-section even. Like, you could have somebody who is Korean, but they could be 25 and they were raised in the United States. But
sure.
Then you may have somebody who's 50 who was from Korea. Or you might even have an African-American person who was raised in Korea, and the Korean person wasn't raised in Korea, and the African-American person may know more
about
first-generation.
That's a great example. That's a really good example. Well, there are more examples like this, and I encourage our listeners to go out this wonderful list, 25 traits of a diverse organization, or 25 ways to measure how well you manage diversity. Sima, give us the information about how people can access this wonderful list and other ways that you can provide services to them with your diversity business.
Okay. To find me online, you can go to my website, which is www.simalieberman.com. And then you can hit, and on my website on the top, you can hit my blog. And on my blog, which is Sima Lieberman's Inclusion Blog, .blogspot.com, but you can just go through my website, you'll find the article, 25 Ways to Measure How Well You Manage Diversity. And if you're interested in more of my work and want me to work with you, just ask more questions, you can call me at 510-527-0700, or email me at sima@simalieberman.com. And I just want to say that I have, in the next couple of weeks, I have a booklet coming out, 105 actions to manage diversity, and 105 actions to manage diversity and create inclusion. And if you want to know more about that booklet, please email me. I'd love to share information with you.
Super. Sima Lieberman, you are always full of great information, and I encourage everyone to go and check out that list, and most importantly, compare your own organization with this list to make sure you're doing what the list has suggested, and also pick up the booklet that's coming out with the 105 ways. That's going to be a great, great topic of discussion going forward. Sima, my friend, thank you so much for being a guest on my program.
Oh, thank you, Carol. Thank you so much. I always love being a guest on your show. All right, bye.
You too. All right, bye-bye now. Sima Lieberman, great person, and just a great explainer, and a person who really understands from the inside out the importance of all aspects of diversity. Well, I'm excited because my fourth book came out just a few weeks ago, my personal journal, Chronicle Your Life One Day at a Time, and it will be on the website in the next week or so. I've obviously been busy with breakfast activities and other things too. It's a busy January, and that's a good thing, but this is really a book that's coming to its own based on the 17 years that I have been journaling every day, with few exceptions, just about the day's activities. And what I'm really doing now is using this book as a resource for workshops that I want to run around the country to teach primarily women, but other men as well. And I had a man in a workshop that I did in New Jersey a couple of weeks ago using this book, but so that you can ultimately tell your own story. I'm a big believer now as a 60-year-old that you are the only one who really can tell your story, and who best knows all the intricacies, the things that worked, didn't work, the emotional attachment or the detachment, the implications, the problems, the complications, the joys, the ecstasy, the real feelings that you have in your life. So this book, at the very beginning, has a short section that teaches you how to journal. Now, some people look at a narrative, having a bound book and writing the bound book for several pages as being a way to journal. That's only one way to journal. I show you other ways where you can journal using photography, multimedia skills, etc. So there are ways where you can figure out what your rhythm is so that you can begin to do, I think, important work on yourself. We spend so much time on other people. We are glued to our television sets and the movie screens with the icons that we have, the entertainers and the artists in our society, but we don't spend the same amount of time looking introspectively at ourselves. And I think I have a good sense of who I am because I've been journaling for 17 years for a tragic reason at first because of the death of my son, but it's something that has become a part of me that has, in addition to honoring my son's memory, also picks up on all the other aspects of my life, my family, my business activities, my problems, my joys, my sorrows, the things I worry about, the things I really have as goals, the visions that I have in life, all of that comes out in journaling. And I, in this book, will share with you ways about how you can journal. Again, this will be at the website. It'll be at Amazon.com in the next week or so. But I think it's a wonderful way where you can begin the process of healing or growing or nurturing yourself or expanding through journaling. When we look at the great works and the ways, the philosophical things that are with us and that we study, it's all the written word. So I'm a real big believer in terms of the written word with journaling, but obviously there are other ways that you can also accomplish this. So give me a call at 508-947-5755, or again, you'll go to the website, either tellcarol.com or nssconnect.com in the next week or so. This book will be there. We have plenty of copies. We'd love to send a copy or two or more to you, and we certainly would love to come to your neck of the woods with maybe 20 people or more or less and have a really good, strong journal writing workshop. I'm just a believer in this, and I want this to be almost like a crusade or a campaign to get people to really write introspectively about themselves so that you become a good student of who you really are. I'm also excited because our breakfast is moving along very nicely. I'm just delighted with the number of companies and organizations who have come on board as our sponsors after the event has ended. We will do our diligence to list and pay tribute to everybody who is a part of this exciting Black History Empowerment Recognition Breakfast that will take place on Tuesday, February 11th, 2014, from 8:30 in the morning until 10:30. With networking starting at 7:30. If you're in the greater Boston area, find a way, bring your colleagues and staff persons. We are filling up. Seating is limited, but for you, and you can find out all about that at mssconnect.com. I'm excited because we're honoring four wonderful companies. Patricia Bonner Duvall and her husband John Aki Duvall run independent companies. We're going to honor them. Ron Walker has started a merchant bank, and Frugal Bookstore is ably managed and owned by Leonard Egerton and Clarissa. And our award-winning entrepreneurial speaker, who has the largest African-American female-owned business in the city of Boston, for Roxbury Technology President and CEO Beth Williams, is our keynote speaker that morning. So it's all about entrepreneurship, all about Black entrepreneurship, which is near and dear to my heart, why it's important, why we all need to be connected in some kind of way. You'll learn all about it on Tuesday, February 11th. Go to the website, mssconnect.com. Sign up. Love to have you there. Have a great week. We'll be back next week to talk to you about exciting issues. This is Carol Copeland Thomas. Empowerment begins when you believe in yourself. stay warm. See you soon.